Radha Madhava Kunjabhihani Kapijana Vallabha Giri Vadadhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Janaranjana Chamuna Kiravana Chari Yamuna Kiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vadadhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Kiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabhi Hari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Astotra Shatta Sri Srimad Zivan Grace Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananda Kota Vaishnavinda Ki Iskand Founder Acharya Zivan Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Gaura Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 4, text number 14. So I'm going to have Madhumati read the lead us in the chanting of the verse, then read the translation and purport.
Namo Namaste Srishabhaya Satvatam Vidurakashthaya muhuku yoginam Nirasta samya atishayena radhasa Swadhamani brahmani ramsyate namaha Namo namaste sarishabhaya satvatam विदुरकाष्ठाय मुहुकु योगिनाम् निरस्तसाम्यतिशयेन राधसा स्वधाम्नि ब्रह्मणि रंस्यते नमः
Towards Namaha Namaha Te, let me offer my obeisances unto you. Astu R. Rishabhaya, unto the great associate Satvatam of the members of the Yadu dynasty. Vidura Kashthaya, one who is far from mundane wranglers. Muhu, always. Ku Yoginam, of the non devotees. Nirasta, vanquished. Samya, equal status. Swadha. Atishayena, by greatness, Radhasa, by opulence, Swadhamani, in his own abode, Brahmani, in the spiritual sky, Ramsyate, enjoys, Namaha, I do bow down. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him who is the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty and who is always a problem for the non-devotees. He is a supreme enjoyer of both the material and spiritual worlds, yet he enjoys his own abode in the spiritual sky. There is no one equal to him because his transcendental opulence is immeasurable. Purport. There are two sides of the transcendental manifestations of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. For the devotees, he is the constant companion, as in the case of his becoming one of the family members of the Yadu dynasty, or his becoming the friend of Arjuna, or his becoming the associate neighbor of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, as the son of Nanda Yashoda, the friend of Sudama, Sridham, and Madhumangal, or the lover of the damsels of Rajabhumi, etc. These are aspects of his personal feature, and by his impersonal feature, he expands the rays of Brahma Jyoti, which is limitless and all-pervasive. Part of this all-pervasive Brahma Jyoti, which is compared to the sun rays, is covered by the darkness of the Mahat Tattva, and this insignificant part is known as the material world. In this material world, there are innumerable universes, like the one we can experience, And in each of them, there are hundreds of thousands of planets like the one we are inhabiting. The mundaners are more or less captivated by the unlimited expansion of the rays of the Lord. But the devotees are concerned more with his personal form, from which everything is emanating. Janmadi asya yataha, Srimad Bhagavatam 111. As the sun rays are concentrated in the sun disk, the Brahma Jyoti is concentrated in Goloka Vrindavan, the topmost spiritual planet in the spiritual sky. The immeasurable spiritual sky is full of spiritual planets named Vaikunthas, far beyond the material sky. The mundaners have insufficient information of even the mundane sky, so what can they think of the spiritual sky? Therefore, the mundaners are always far, far away from him. With their tiny rockets, they are having difficulty reaching even the nearest planet, the moon. Therefore, what can they conceive of the spiritual sky and the planets there? Even if in the future they are able to manufacture some machine whose speed may be accelerated to the velocity of the wind or mind, the mundaners will still be unable to imagine reaching the planets in the spiritual sky. So the Lord and his residential abode will always remain a myth or a mysterious problem for them. But for the devotees, the Lord will always be available as an associate. In the spiritual sky, the Lord's opulence is immeasurable. He resides in all the spiritual planets, the innumerable Vaikuntha planets, by expanding his plenary portions along with his liberated devotee associates. But the impersonalists who want to merge into the existence of the Lord are allowed to merge as one of the spiritual sparks of the Brahma Jyoti. They have no qualifications for becoming associates of the Lord, either in Vaikuntha planets or in the supreme planet, Goloka Vrindavan, described in the Bhagavad Gita as Madhama, and here in this verse as Swadhama of the Lord. This Madhama or Swadhama is described in the Bhagavad Gita 15:6 as follows. Na tad bhasyate suryo na shashanko na pavaka yad gatva na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. The Lord's Swadhama does not require any sunlight or moonlight or electricity for illumination. That dhama or place is supreme, and whoever goes there never comes back to this material world. The Vaikuntha planets and the Goloka Vrindavan planet are all self-illuminating, and the rays scattered by those Swadhamas of the Lord constitute the existence of the Brahma Jyoti. As further confirmed in the Vedas, like the Mundaka 2.2.10, Katha 2.2.15, and Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.14. Na tattva suryo bhati na chandra tarakam Nema vidyuto bhanti kutoyam agnihi tam eva bhantam anubhati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. In the Swadhama of the Lord, there is no need of sun, moon, or stars for illumination, nor is there need of electricity, so what to speak of ignited lamps? On the other hand, it is because those planets are self-illuminating that all effulgence has become possible. And whatever there is that is dazzling is due to the reflection of that Swadhama. One who is dazzled by the effulgence of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti cannot know the personal transcendence. Therefore, in the Ishopanishad 15, it is prayed that the Lord remove his dazzling effulgence so that the devotee can see his real reality. It is spoken thus, Hiranyamayena patrena satyasha pihitam mukham tattvam pushan apavrenu satya dharmaya drishtaye. O Lord, you are the maintainer of everything, both material and spiritual, and everything flourishes by your mercy. Your devotional service or bhakti yoga is the actual principle of religion, satya dharma, and I am engaged in that service. So, kindly protect me by showing your real face. Please, therefore, remove the veil of your Brahma Jyoti rays so that I can see your form of eternal bliss and knowledge.
Thank you for reading that rather long purport. Just one more thing before We talk a little bit about this verse and other verses describing the spiritual world. So I'd like to give this flower garland to my older sister so I can take her blessing. Now that can be said, not 50 years ago, when we were little kids. So thank you. Om Agyanatamaranda Shagana Janasarapaya Chakshur Militamiyana Tasmaya Shri Guruve. The message of Srimad Bhagavatam is a universal one. It's not meant for a particular class of men or in any sectarian way, but it's meant to explain the science of God to all human beings for their ultimate benefit. And that purpose is shown right at the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the second canto, in the first canto, second chapter, there are a number of verses which explain this. I just want to cover two of them, text number 13 and 14 of the second chapter. The universal nature is explained thus. O best among the twice born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. Therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify, remember, and worship the personality of Godhead, who is the protector of the devotees. So that concluding word, therefore, what should be the most important activity that occupy our lives? And what is that one activity which can be woven into the fabric of every life on the planet? That is to remember and please the Supreme Lord by our actions. And in the second verse, the one action that we want to focus on today is hearing about the Supreme Lord. In the verse in purport, Prabhupada has explained or introduced the subject matter that it describes in Bhagavad Gita as should, as being one which should capture our mind, capture our interest. And what is that that should capture our mind, our interest? Descriptions of the name, form, pastimes, paraphernalia, and holy place, holy dham, or living place of the Supreme Lord. Hearing is such an important activity, and it's very powerful. What we hear shapes our lives. Well, we can know that by taking a look at the modern media and how they attempt to shape our lives, whether it be the political life of a nation or recreational pleasures. They're promoted by the use of sound vibration and our ability to hear and react to that sound vibration. Hearing is so important. Therefore, there's a prohibition what we should shy away from in terms of hearing and being absorbed in just a material conception of life. But on the positive side, hearing is recommended to develop our attraction for the Supreme Lord. Just a couple of examples of how powerful hearing is on the spiritual side. We know that Lord Brahma, the creator of this universe, when he found himself sitting on a lotus stem, wondering about the origin of his own creation, he searched in different ways to try to find out the answer. And finally, in seeing his endeavor, the Supreme Lord spoke two syllables, ta-pa. Just two syllables, but they were so pregnant with meaning that when Brahma heard them and meditated upon them, he could understand everything he needed to do and his job of creating this material world. Hearing is so powerful. Also, there's the example of Rukmini. Rukmini, beautiful princess of Vidarbha, developed a desire to have Krishna as her husband. Now, how did she develop that desire? She hadn't met him. She hadn't communicated with him in any way. But she had heard about him. She had heard about his personal beauty. She had heard about his chivalrous activities. She, through simply hearing, she developed love for Krishna. So this process of hearing is something that we're meant to take advantage of. And that's why I read these two verses from the first canto, second chapter, because they conclude, therefore, with one-pointed attention, one should constantly hear about, glorify and remember, and worship the personality of Godhead. So hearing is stressed. We should always have a program for hearing in our life. We should build our social lives around such hearing about the Supreme Lord. We should engage in work which has us remember the Supreme Lord. These things have the power to transform our lives, and we should take advantage of them in whatever way we can. So what I thought about how we could take advantage of them this morning, based on the purport, Prabhupada is introducing a viewpoint of the spiritual world, what it's like. So I thought that we could concentrate on various passages from different scriptures, which give us a deeper picture into the spiritual world, one that comes through sound which is transformative. Think about it for a minute. If you've never been to a place, how do you develop attraction for going there? You read the tourist brochures, you look at what the weather is going to be like, what activities can be done there. And through these things, through hearing about these things, you develop a desire to go and visit that place. Same principle works for developing a desire to get out of this material world where there's birth, death, old age, and disease, and disappointment at every turn. There's an opportunity to get out of it, to go someplace else. But we have to hear about that place first, and when we hear, then a desire develops. So there are various scriptures which describe in detail what it's like where God lives and what he does there and who's there with him. All these things are described in detail. And if we just take a few samples of that, which I'll give you this morning, then we can start along the path of developing desire to go there and take part in the activities there. So let's start with a passage from Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada's translation of the 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm sure you're all familiar with this quote, but try to keep it in mind and keep your ears and hearts open so it helps us through hearing, helps us develop a stronger desire to go there. Although this first description is pretty strong on its own. Krishna book says, Goloka, also called Vrindavan, is always full of cows. There are many waterfalls which are always pouring water, and the sound is so sweet that it covers the sound of the crickets. And because water flows all over, the forest always looks very green and beautiful. The inhabitants of Vrindavan are never disturbed by the scorching heat of the sun or high summer temperatures. The lakes of Vrindavan are surrounded by green grasses and various kinds of lotus flowers bloom there. The air blowing in Vrindavan carries the aromatic pollen of these lotus flowers. When the particles of water from the waves of the Yamuna River, the lakes and the waterfalls touch the bodies of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they automatically feel a cooling effect. Vrindavan is such a nice place. Flowers are always blooming, and there are even various kinds of decorated deer. Birds are chirping, peacocks are crowing and dancing, and bees are humming. The cuckoos there sing nicely in five kinds of tunes. Sound inviting? Well, there's more, actually. That describes the setting, and then there's God himself, Krishna. So the Krishna book goes on. Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure, blowing his flute, accompanied by his elder brother Balaram and other coward boys and the cows, enter the beautiful forest of Vrindavan to enjoy the atmosphere. They walk into the midst of newly grown leaves of trees whose flowers resemble peacock feathers. They are garlanded by those flowers and decorated with saffron chalk. Sometimes they are dancing and singing, and sometimes they are wrestling with one another. While Krishna dances, some of the coward boys sing, and others play on flutes. Some bugle on buffalo horns or clap their hands, praising Krishna. Dear brother, you are dancing very nicely. So that's a description that we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam of what goes on in the spiritual world and what the atmosphere is like. It's very pleasing. And just like in this world, the more you get absorbed in thinking of a destination, you almost feel like you're there before you arrive. Similarly, by meditating on these kinds of descriptions of what the spiritual world is like, our desire to go there becomes strong. And we start to, the hold that miserable material life has on us starts to slacken. And the beauty of eternal life with God becomes a reality, step by step. So this is Vrindavan, the holy dham, where Lord Sri Krishna lives with all of his associates. Now that dham, that holy place of pilgrimage, was manifest on this earth 5,000 years ago, just south of Delhi in India. Of course, there was no Delhi in those days. But that same place is there, and we can go there. And even some of the attributes of that holy place are still available today. There are three things which were part of the holy Dham when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago and are still present today for us to take advantage of. Who knows what those three items are? No one knows.
Jamuna.
Huh?
The Jamuna River.
The Jamuna River. Yes.
Braj.
Braj, the dust, holy dust of Vrindavan. Giri Govardhana Ki. Giriraj, the mountain, Giriraj. So our acharyas or teachers in our line have preserved descriptions of the beauty of those places which we can still glimpse if we go there today. And so what I thought we could do was read a few things specifically about these aspects of the holy Dham which are still present, again, to develop our desire to go there. So let's start with the dust of Vrindavan. Normally, you go any place that's dusty, it's not going to be very pleasing. But the holy dust of Vrindavan is special. And it's special why? Why is it special? I hear somebody saying.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that Siddha Dhuli Sadrisham Vichinta, he prayed for to become a dust, lotus, because dust is pre-deposited with eternity and cognition potency. More than that, endowed with ecstasy, ladini potency. So it's not a dust of this matter.
Yes, spoken simply. It's touched with the footprints of the Supreme Lord Krishna, and therefore it becomes auspicious and beneficial to everyone who takes it. Now, I think Chaturatma is giving class tomorrow, and he loves to go to Vrindavan, especially during special Kartik season. And one thing he looks forward to doing there is rolling in the dust of Vrindavan, forgetting one's status, one's fine dress, one's proper attitude. He shamelessly rolls in the dust of Vrindavan, begging for the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Oh, for the opportunity to do that. I did it with him 1 year together. But the dust of Vrindavan. So here are some things that describe the dust of Vrindavan. Quote, in the highest region of Vaikuntha is a spiritual planet called Krishna Loka. It has three dimensions, Dwarka, Mathura, and Gokuloka. Srigaloka is the highest of all, is also called Braja. Goloka, Svetadweep, and Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan's dust is non-different from Krishna, when you take a little dust from Vrindavan, Dham, it means you are taking dust from Krishna's lotus feet. The dust of Govinda's lotus feet is so sacred that even Brahma, Shiva, and the goddess of fortune, Rama, take dust on their heads to dispel sinful reactions. It's from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. The dust of Krishna's lotus feet, which is the source of holiness for all places of pilgrimage, is worshipped by all the great demigods. The principal deities of all planets are engaged in his service, and they consider themselves most fortunate to take the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna on their crowns. So maybe a little explanation, because again, dust may seem foreign to us as being the highest, but when we appear before God to render service to him, it's a matter of humbling ourselves in order to get the supreme mercy of the Lord. One can't go in a proud, haughty attitude and receive the mercy of anyone, even in this world. You can't do that. So why should you be able to think that you can do that with the Supreme Lord? But when one takes the dust or goes to the feet of the Lord and seeks shelter there, then the Lord is more than happy to reciprocate. So that attitude is represented by taking the dust. There's a story about Akura's journey to Vrindavan, which is exemplary. And Krishna book says, one who intends to visit Vrindavan should follow the ideal footsteps of Akura and always think of the pastimes and activities of the Lord. As soon as one reaches the boundaries of Vrindavan, he should immediately smear the dust of Vrindavan all over his body without thinking of his material position and prestige. Actually, one cannot go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. The process of going to Vrindavan is shown by Akura. Does anybody have any dust stories from their visits to the Holy Dham? People don't roll in the dust enough. And your Yadumna Maharaj rolled in the dust at Govardhan. Okay, well, there are two other things, manifestations of the Dham, which we can still take advantage of. Another one is Govardhan Hill. So let me read a little bit about the beauty of Govardhan Hill. Govardhan is like a flag of intense sweetness placed in the opulent land of Vrindavan. As the king of mountains, Govardhan Hill offers very pleasing royal service to the young prince of Braja. Govardhan Hill's beautiful forests and caves are Krishna's nectar pastime palaces, each one perfect for the supreme good fortune of his beloved and her friends. Govardhan Hill's trees and vines serve Krishna by offering him blossoming branches with sweet fruits and flowers filled with honey, nectar, and fragrant pollen. The important position of Govardhan Hill is that he provides so many places where Krishna and his friends can enjoy. There are valleys where they can take the cows and get newer grasses. There are caves in which he plays with his boyfriends and girlfriends. There are waterfalls which cool them off in the hot summer. And there are fruits and flowers that can be used for decoration of each other. A big pastime that takes place in Vrindavan between Krishna and the cowherd boys and the cowherd girls is that they decorate each other with the beautiful natural elements found in Vrindavan. So Govardhan Hill provides these things in abundance for the Lord's pastimes. So it goes on. There is a pleasant grove of sandalwood trees on Govardhan Hill. Although snakes generally flock to sandalwood trees, no snakes ever come here. Or sometimes a snake may come, it is not poisonous. Or sometimes a poisonous snake may come, its poison is automatically counteracted, and it can do no harm. So Krishna will protect you, don't worry, when you go into the forest of Govardhan. Anyway, there are 36 different indications of Govardhan's greatness. I won't read them all, but they're from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's Vraja Riti Chintamani. You'll find a description of Govardhan Hill there. And the last of the three still present is Jamuna. So I'll read a little bit about Jamuna also. Passing the seven seas and seven planetary systems and breaking through the sevenfold coverings of the universe, the Jamuna enters the spiritual Goloka planet and wanders here and there to serve Vrindavan by carrying water. The Jamuna River passes through the fat forest and flows to Nandiswara Hill. The winds through the it winds through Vraja in a very crooked course, searching for Krishna, the moon of Vraja. The Jamuna River is like a blue lotus flower garland, a sapphire necklace, or a blue sash worn by the goddess of Vrindavan. So why don't I stop there and ask if anybody can want to make any contributions to our hearing today about Sri Vrindavan Dham, so that we may develop a desire to go there, particularly in Kartik, which is in a few months. You got Mika?
Thank you, Prabhu, for bringing up these topics so nicely. I heard a lecture by Gauranga Prabhu, and he was stating the difference between the Ganga and the Jamuna. He said when you go in the Ganga, you get freed from your sinful reactions. But when you go in the Jamuna, you get freed from your pious reactions. Interesting.
Well, pious or impious, they have their effects in the material world. Transcendental means beyond pious and impious.
Yeah.
So it's a transcendental experience. Has anybody here bathed in the Jamuna? Or I should say, who hasn't bathed in the Jamuna? You haven't?
You haven't?
You have, of course. You're a resident of Vrindavan. Well, if you haven't bathed in Jamuna, it's available very easily once you get to Vrindavan. It's not hard. Maybe Govardhan, you have to go out to Govardhan. Maybe you don't want to spend your energy circumambulating Govardhan. But Jamuna is right there, within a short walk from Krishna Balaram Mandir. So everyone should take advantage.
Also, Prabhu, regarding the dust, this is stated that the vibration from the mouth of the pure devotee is mixed with the saffron dust particles of Krishna's lotus feet. Can you explain how that sound is mixed?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I take it for granted that it's true.
Okay.
But how those 10 little elements mixed together. I can hear, and then by hearing, maybe one day I'll understand fully. But I hear, and if we hear with faith, developing faith, then we'll understand. Anybody else have it? Yes.
Why is that we've been hearing about Goloka Vrindavan, you know, Vrindavan, and you were saying at the start of your class is that when we want to go to a place, we like to read about it and we want to go. But why is the desire not strong enough to leave this world to really meditate and actually wanting to go there? What stops us from having that intense desire to wanting to go?
Well, I think the only thing that stops us is our desire. Is our desire strong enough? But we have to consider where we're coming from. When it goes someplace, that's fine. That destination may be known. But where are you coming from? Well, if we examine ourselves according to instructions of the scriptures, we can see that our desire to go to the spiritual world is not as strong as our desire to remain here and be involved in mundane activities. Of course, in one sense, you can't blame us because since time immemorial, we've been floundering in this world, trying to find some enjoyment. And whatever little enjoyment we have keeps us bound here because we think that I'll lose this and then I'll have nothing. But the purpose of hearing these descriptions from Shastra is to build our faith that we do have something in the spiritual life that's greater than material life, and that it's worth sacrificing for, it's worth endeavoring for. Again, in this material world, you don't get anything without endeavor. So what makes you think that it's going to be so easy without any endeavor to just leave behind our attachments for millions of lifetimes that have kept us in this material world? So we have to build our strength, and we do that by hearing. Our faith increases, and it comes to a point where we're no longer bound by material desires. So, like that. Anything else?
So I thought, why not recall the pastime of Narada Muni, or Krishna telling Narada Muni, or that he has a headache, and Narada Muni asked what would relieve the headache, and Krishna told him that the dust from the feet of his devotee would relieve the headache. So Narada Muni went to the wives of Krishna to ask for the dust from their feet, but they refused because of their fear of going to hell, and asked Brahmins like that, and they all had the same reply. But then he went to the gopis, the residents of Vrindavan, and asked for the dust from their feet to cure Krishna's headache. And without any reservation or hesitation, they immediately gave him the dust from their feet. And he said, don't you know that you could go to hell by your feet, dust touching Krishna? And they said, we don't care if we go to hell. If Krishna headache is relieved, that's all that matters to us. So, it was a nice pastime at the dust.
Krishna is such a nice person. Just think, he doesn't just demand that we take his feet, dust from his feet, but he's ready to take the dust from the feet of his devotees in reciprocation for the love and service they render to him. What a wonderful person. So if there's nothing else, we'll end there. Oh, you have something interesting?
In the chapter 7 of Krishna book, Trinavartan, Prabhupada's introducing the whole idea of hearing about Krishna, and there's one sentence that, let me find it now. Uh-oh, where'd it go? Oh, here we go. So when our group, we have a reading group that's been meeting every night for 2 years now. So when we came across this, we all memorized it because it was so good. Hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. To hear his activities is to evolve one's transcendental nature simply by hearing. So just, it's one sentence, but it's, hearing is an opportunity to associate with the Lord. So that became like our motto, our statement of purpose. To hear his activities is to evolve one's transcendental nature simply by hearing.
Very nice. Actually, my sister and her church leads a Bible study group also. So they meet, what, once a week you meet? So hearing, same principle, universal principle for developing the love of God. So we'll end there. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.